Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, and this is the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. Good morning. Graham Anthony joins me.
Good morning, Lynn, and welcome back.
Thank you.
I know you've been on the city tour.
The city tour. Lots of wisdom and education in Boulder and beyond.
Back into the flow of Park City this morning for our monthly segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle. We'll focus on arts and cultural districts. We'll be joined by Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, along with Abby McNulty of the Park City Education Foundation, and Amy McDonald of Kimball Arts Center. A power trio, to be sure. We will hear about how these three great nonprofits partner to bring arts to education.
And then the new director of the Utah Avalanche Center, Chad Brackelsberg, who will join us to talk about his new role and the biggest party of the year for the Utah Avalanche Center. It's taking place tomorrow night at Black Diamond in Salt Lake City, and you can help the center keep us safe from avalanche. It's going to be a good one.
Then, it's not a political discussion, it's a mental health discussion with Dr. Alan Francis, one of the leading psychiatrists of our time. He's written a book called The Twilight of American Sanity, A Psychiatrist Analyzes the Age of Trump. It doesn't question the mental health of Donald Trump. Instead, he looks at the mental health of the country that elected him. Dr. Francis wrote the definition of narcissistic personality disorder in the DSM. That's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the Bible of psychiatry.
It will be very interesting. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Josh here, owner of Estee Pizza, and delighted to support KPCW. Located at 1781 Sidewinder Drive in Prospector, Estee Pizzeria offers New York-style pizza with hand-tossed dough, homemade sauces, as well as vegan and gluten-free items. Open daily for lunch and dinner, 435-731-8970 or esteepizzaco.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Graham Anthony. Well, this month, our segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle, curated by the Park City Summit County Arts Council, we celebrate Arts in Education Week, which is September 10th through 16th this week. It was designated by Congress in 2010, and always the second week in September. It's a time to acknowledge the power of the arts in preparing the next generation of leaders. We discuss, among other things, the national research on the impact of the arts on student achievement and skills development. We're joined by three nonprofit leaders in town here who partner to bring arts to education in our community. Abby McNulty is the executive director of the Park City Education Foundation. Amy McDonald is the education director at the Kimball Arts Center. And Hadley Dynack, of course, who joins us monthly, is the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. And good morning to all of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lynn.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
So, Hadley, why don't we start with you with a big overview of not just Park City, but all of Summit County and what we do in our schools with art education. And it's funny as we reflect on it, because when we all grew up, there was just, art was a part of our curriculum. And now we have to do all of this fancy partnering with nonprofits to bring art. Is that true?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, interestingly, because it's Arts and Education Week, I'm getting all of these news alerts every day through Facebook feeds and email bulletins. And the one that came out this morning from Americans for the Arts said that only 61% of residents nationwide feel that students have sufficient access to arts in their community. So I think that, you know, we can talk about some of the really exciting things that are happening in Summit County as part of this conversation. But nationally, it is, you know, something that I think we've shifted away from as a country. And yet, the value of arts and education let's take this opportunity to celebrate it and talk about how the research really shows the outcomes associated with kids who do arts in school as part of learning have increased academic achievement, as demonstrated on statewide math and reading scores, which is what, you know, a lot of the conversation is about right now. So it's really important to understand that arts help increase those scores. We see research showing arts students who are engaged with arts in the classroom are really feeling more connected to their school. They find school more challenging, more interesting, and really more enjoyable. They demonstrate increased critical thinking. And I think one of the interesting things with respect to mental health is that new brain research physiologically is really showing the benefits of arts education in terms of long and short-term memory, in terms of attention span, which we all know is a really important issue in kids today. And, you know, some of the early awareness of sounds and patterns, which are predictors for reading in very young kids. So exciting stuff, right, to think about. What does the research show? I think another thing, especially in our community, as we talk about differences in income level, is that arts education really helps level the playing field. Some longitudinal research over many years is showing that kids from lower income backgrounds who are arts engaged tend to perform more like average income kids, both in high school and in college. So, you know, we really want to bring up the experiences of our entire community, but looking at that research and thinking about investment, I think, is a really important important thing. So, anyways, I could go on all day. I'd love to geek
you
out
could,
on this
and
stuff,
these are
but
all...
I'm going to stop doing that.
These are all really great points. And Amy McDonald, I'm wondering, you know, you deal with arts and education on a daily basis. It's what you do. Who is seeking out art? Is it the kids? Is it their parents? Is it the educators? I mean, have we turned a generation back onto art in our children?
That's a great question, and so happy to have Hadley and Abby sitting here, too, to talk about it. Yes, I mean, because I oversee all the creative at the Kimball Arts Center, and every day on a daily basis you see from a tot to an adult seeking out meaningful opportunities. And I think the emphasis on meaningful, because in the schools, when kids are engaged, they're more productive, things connect, they like to stay in school. Time and time again, we hear some students are staying in school only because of the art class that by partnering with our organizations we're able to provide. I think what happens is people need the exposure to the arts to understand the connection. And so that's what you try to do. So with partnerships and reaching out in the community, like National Ability Center, Youth Sports Alliance, Kimball Classes, the Elementary Visual Arts Program, arts tours, more and more we're seeing an increased demand and interest just by the awareness and engagement and the richness that it brings to lives. And like I say, and what Hadley was saying, she could geek out all day on information that we can. But more and more companies want people with that are creative thinkers, that know how to be holistic, that know how to problem solve, that know that there's a number of ways to get to an answer, and you do that through the arts.
Absolutely.
Do you find that technology is allowing the expansion of creativity and ideas today, and how is that being used in the classroom now?
Well, specifically, yes, technology is coming into the classroom more and more. And as you know, the director of the Education Foundation, we're providing grants to teachers frequently to engage in art, to marry art and technology. And I think specifically too about the coding program in Park City School District that the Ed Foundation helped launch, and that really is similar to kind of creation and the work of art of creating and using. You know, problem solving. And I think that they're very similar in developing this holistic child that's, you know, kind of an out-of-the-box thinker, that's a problem solver, that finds creative solutions and is willing to go through this process of trial and error.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think the idea really is around teaching with and through the arts. So in some cases, you know, arts are a pullout, and that's a great way to get exposure to, you know, how to the kind of technical parts of art, but also thinking about how we can use art to learn complex curricular skills, like how teachers specifically can use technology and art together. One of the interesting things in Greater Summit County is the new Silver Summit Academy, who's looking at an entire K-12 model. They're just getting off the ground and figuring it out themselves. But around this notion of STEAM, which I don't know if people are aware of, but it's taking STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, and adding the A in for art and figuring out how you put all of those things together to create a 21st century learner that's prepared for the 21st century workforce.
Oh, that's the first time I've heard of STEAM.
Oh, okay.
All right. Enlightening conversation. Well, let's talk a little bit about the partnership, Amy. Maybe, and Abby, you can talk about how you work together to bring funding, to bring arts education into the schools. And do we do it, are we doing it just in the schools, or are you working at the Kemble Arts Center to bring some of the kids from the school on over for a field trip, an artistic field trip?
It's a little bit of both, but I'll just sort of lay a little bit of context, and that is Utah has the lowest funding for a public education system in the country. And so a lot of our programs that are valuable to us as parents and to us as a community, like the arts, are quickly eliminated when it comes to funding priorities. So that is why the Education Foundation and the Kimball were able to create a partnership. It was that there was no art in our elementary schools, and there would not be if it weren't for this partnership. And so the Education Foundation funds the teachers that are in the classrooms, and the Kimball creates the amazing curriculum that our kids are have every month. And so Amy can go into more detail about that, but for me, it's an example of our community understanding and valuing the needs of what art means to kids in schools, and stepping up and coming together to make it happen.
Well said, Abby. I think also Abby couldn't have said it better. Without this partnership, there would be no art in the elementary schools in our Park City area. And and in Summit County, as Hadley is astutely saying, there is much interest and energy also being put into the arts. And one way that we're seeing it is through our arts tours, where either schools come to the Kimball or we go to them to talk about a current exhibition and a hands-on art lesson that ties in the themes represented in the exhibition. And then we also have what we call extended lesson plans, where we tie in visual art and a core curriculum subject. So, for example, we could have art and science, art and language arts, art and geography that we leave behind with the teachers. And more we're seeing more teachers use these lesson plans to extend the learning from an exhibit or programming. And then to also reinforce what Hadley is saying, so you see these minds starting to grasp and develop, and then you get to creative thinkers and professionals that are the desirables for communities because they're the innovators of the next generation.
I have to say, this is such a great collaboration, because I can attest to the quality of the outcomes here. I'm lucky enough to walk the halls of one of our elementary schools here, and I see the work that's being produced. The hallways are covered in fabulous artwork, and it's my understanding that Kimball Arts Center, perhaps you personally, are conceiving these projects. And then they're executed in the classroom with such personality. And it's very clear that it's benefiting not just the individual students, but the school as a whole. Is that the system, though? The Kimball Arts Center designs a program and PCEF funds it. How does it transition into the school itself and the teachers?
Thank you for the question. Yes, we write the lesson plans. And we have three very amazing EVA instructors that are trained and skillful at teaching. And what's wonderful about art lessons is there's many interpretations. So while there is a lesson plan each month for the students, the teachers spin it with their personal touch. And so there's a lot of vibrancy and dynamic interaction between teachers and students. And with the school, and the Park City Ed Foundation is so incredible to believe wholeheartedly in the value of this, as is the Summit County Arts Council, Park City Summit County Arts Council, to back it with funding and support and school engagement.
Well, it's a rare thing when you can see the results of your work literally displayed for the public to see, and it's fabulous.
And if any of our listeners are wondering right now how they might help to fund this, of course, we have Live PC, Give PC coming up. But in a couple of months only away. But how would they go about funding these programs specifically? Do they go through the Education Foundation? Do they go through Kimball Arts Center?
That's a great question. The Education Foundation funds the teachers in the schools, and the Kimball Arts Center funds the creation of the curriculum and the supplies. So it really is a partnership. So you can make a donation to the Kimball or to the Park City Education Foundation.
Or both.
Yeah, or both.
At the same time.
And I did want to just say one other thing about bridge building and the program and building community within the school. I sat in my son's class last year, and they had a brand new student who didn't speak English. He was in tears as he was getting dropped off. And I was volunteering that morning. And then later in the afternoon, I came back to volunteer in art. And, you know, he had the same name of one of Pablo Picasso's brothers. And so they were all talking about Jorge, Pablo Picasso's brother. And this little boy's name was Jorge. And all the kids rallied around this little boy. Jorge, we know a Jorge. This is so amazing. And all of a sudden, this child who had been in tears in the morning was, you know, now being championed by all of his friends. That was really very special.
That is a great story. Abby McNulty, the executive director of the Park City Education Foundation, along with Amy McDonald of the Kimball Arts Center and Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Thanks for your monthly installment on arts and culture in our mountain town.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you. We'll be back after these words. We're moving from summer into winter. Why not? We're going to talk avalanche. Stay with us.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process. Located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
Hi, this is Brenda with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage collection, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Thank you for helping to keep Summit County clean and green. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Graham Anthony. Well, the Utah Avalanche Center, while based in Salt Lake, is very active in avalanche forecasting in the mountains around Park City. That's why we like to check in with them this time of year, especially considering we're about to move from summer right into winter. At least that's my exaggerated prediction for this Friday, because I heard at 9,500 feet, we will have snow on Friday. Oh, we have a new executive director for the Utah Avalanche Center. It's Park City resident. In fact, well, I think he's still a Park City resident, Chad Brackelsberg. You probably know him. He joins us now to lead us through the check-in and to highlight the annual party and fundraiser taking place tomorrow evening at Black Diamond in Salt Lake City. Welcome, Chad. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Great to have you back. So we have spoken to you many times when you were the guy who put together the Utah Schemo races, but now you've stepped into a new role. You've taken over for Paul Daigle, who was the previous director of the Utah Avalanche Center.
I have, yes. So after 14 years with the Utah Avalanche Center, Paul is retiring or semi-retiring. He's staying on with us in an educational role. But I moved in July and am busy getting up to speed and learning everything that Paul has done and built over the last 14 years.
Nice. Now, you came from the corporate world, which I didn't even know, because I think of you as the guy who races up hills and skis fast down them. So what was your old role?
So spent the last 20 years working in a variety of large corporations in technology operations and consulting. And after 20 years, I decided it was time for a change of feeling and a little less time on the road and time home. It will be well spent and a new enjoyable role.
Excellent.
So we heard our first hints this morning in the weather forecast of snow precipitation perhaps this weekend.
I've heard on
the peaks.
I've heard potentially down to 8,000 feet even this morning.
Oh. So,
but it doesn't sound like very much. It's always a mixed blessing. You know, it's always exciting when the first snowfall hits, but you know, we also hope for not a lot of early season snow because that does set us up for some early season and mid-season instabilities. So if you look at last year, our nice stable snowpack was partially due to that wonderful warm November we had.
And how much of your work then is in planning for the unknown as a season approaches and on-the-ground facilities management or materials management?
So there's two parts to the Utah Avalanche Center. We have the Forest Service component, which is the actual forecasters who go out in the field, do the evaluations, and then deliver the daily avalanche and mountain weather forecast. And then there's our nonprofit side. So Mark Staples continues to run the Forest Service side, and then I've moved into the nonprofit side. And so the nonprofit side is more responsible for the planning, the education, the awareness, and the fundraising to help support the Forest Service side.
Know before you go, the Utah Avalanche Center won an award. Wasn't it like in the Banff Film Festival or something, like some huge award for that educational video that you put on, which is phenomenal.
It was. It's sort of one of our flagship awareness programs meant originally developed for high school age kids to really introduce them to avalanche awareness. And we've had a few revisions over the years. The last revision, as you mentioned, it was a finalist at the Banff Mountain Film Festival last year. And we continue to expand that program. It's now growing internationally. It's being used in numerous foreign languages, Japanese, Russian, Spanish, including several others. And it's really what Paul is going to be focusing on in his new role is even developing that program further with sort of what we're really excited to be just starting down some e-learning modules. So we're actually going to build that out into up to potentially 15 different modules that you'll be able to take online and really get an avalanche awareness at your own schedule in your house and then be more prepared when you take that level one avalanche class.
Wow.
Boy, that's huge. And I will for one, be looking that up and learning everything I can. I'm being lured deeper off pieced every year. And how much do you attribute these programs and the education component of what you do to the numbers of accidents and I don't even want to say the bad outcomes?
So, yeah, it's, I wouldn't say it's necessarily attributed to the accidents as much as to the growth. Yeah, the use of backcountry and side country, both skiing and snowmobiling, snowshoeing, walking your dog, whatever it might be, it's really growing rapidly. You notice it in the Wasatch back here, you notice it in the Uintas, you know, anybody who skis, you know, in the Wasatch front, it's blatantly obvious there, but it's happening everywhere throughout the West and Europe, everywhere. So it's sort of keeping pace with that growth. So as we see the number of users increase, we are constantly adapting our awareness and education programs to the new user groups and how to reach more and more people.
Now, you have a party tomorrow night, and this is an important one, and I typically miss it because I'm still in summer mode, but I was happy that it popped up in my inbox, and it's the annual fundraiser at Black Diamond right in the parking lot for the Utah Avalanche Center, and it's tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. It's a really fun party, so tell us the highlights.
It's actually a great party. It's sort of the kickoff to winter, which might be fitting since it might be snowing tomorrow night in the mountains, so it does happen, rain or shine. And as Lynn said, it's the Black Diamond parking lot at 2100 East and 3900 South in Salt Lake City.
Not the gymnasium.
Not the gymnasium, the
studio
at Kimball Junction.
Kimball Junction.
Correct. You do have to drive down to Salt Lake for this one, but we expect about 1,000 people there. There's live music, Mexican food. Uinta Brewery is serving beer. We have vendor booths showcasing some of their new products. We have a lot of giveaways. And the big key component is our silent auction. We have over 200 items ranging from artwork to jewelry to mountain bikes, carbon wheel sets for your mountain bike if you just need an upgrade, avalanche gear, ski gear, lots of dining certificates for both Salt Lake and Park City areas. You name it, and you can probably find it. One of the exciting things this year is we are moving into the 21st century. Our silent auction is now online, so You can everybody can bid from their smartphone at the event, or you can even bid while you're at home if you can't attend the event. So we're sort of excited for this new technology at our event.
So with the new technology, since it will be there, and I think people are always curious about the latest technology that might protect you if you find yourself in an avalanche. Those seem to be the items that people talk about most. And what is out there? What do you use? What's effective? I mean, it's most effective to never find yourself in an avalanche to begin with.
Yeah, and that's one of the components of the Know Before You Go program is get the gear. And, you know, with the very basics being your beak and shovel probe, and that grows, you know, there's beyond just that gear. There's your first aid gear that you need to carry so that if something does happen, you're prepared. And, you know, really in the last few years, the biggest probably change to advances for that would actually be the introduction of the airbag packs. So, you know, that's quickly in a lot of circles becoming the fourth piece of required avalanche gear of having an airbag pack so that, as Lynn said, hopefully you don't have problems. But if you do get yourself into a bad situation, it just helps increase your odds of less injury.
That sounds like a bad substitute for good judgment.
Exactly. Avoidance is the best key. And that, yeah, that's really the whole awareness message is it's not about what about getting into trouble. It's about how to avoid trouble and recognize limitations and red flags and other things that should alert you to the dangerous conditions in the backcountry.
Is it not a big concern for you that the more commercial and available and high profile the equipment becomes, the more likely people are to take bolder steps than they probably should?
It's definitely a concern of ours, and it's nationwide or throughout the West something that we are addressing and looking at. You know, as gear gets lighter and better, people can go farther and deeper, and you do increase the odds for an accident or for getting people into trouble. And so it's definitely part of the growing awareness message, and as I said, we change as our users change, and that's part of that changing message of getting out to people that, you know, just because you can get there doesn't mean it's safe.
And really, no matter what your technology, the bottom line is, and you probably know the statistics on this, that most death occurs from trauma versus suffocation that you would die from just being buried by an avalanche.
Trauma is definitely a high risk during an avalanche if you do get caught. So again, you always want to try to avoid getting caught, and you know, also knowing your surroundings. What is your terrain? What's below you? You know, always being aware of your surroundings.
Yeah. Chad Brackelsberg, he's the new director of the Utah Avalanche Center, and he will be at the party tomorrow night. It starts at 6 p.m. It's at the Black Diamond store. Excuse me. That's at Black Diamond Equipment. It's on 39th South in Salt Lake City at 2092 East. And lots of great items. I've been to that before. It's one of those fortunate / unfortunate times where I got everything I bid on. Hate when that happens, but a really great party.
Yeah, and tickets are available at utahavalanchecenter.org/events, and there's a link from the event page to buy your tickets, and come down and join us. If you can't make the party, you can still register and go through and look at the silent auction items and bid on silent auction items from home. And also Live PC, Give PC is coming up as well. And you can always support us on November 10th locally that way.
That's right. That's one of the rare nonprofits that's based in Salt Lake that is included in that. And again, it's because you folks are protecting us up here in Park City from avalanche. So
Yes. Thanks
very much for your efforts and congratulations on your new role.
Thank you, Lynn and Graham.
Thanks,
and we'll
Chad.
Be back after these words from our underwriters. Stay with us. It's The Mountain Life.
Hi, I'm Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain hosts winter events throughout the season, including Snowfest, the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all the events happening at Park City Mountain this winter can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Graham Anthony. Well, the next conversation we'll have is not, as much as it may sound like one, a political discussion. It's a mental health discussion, and it's where we are, quite possibly, as a country. Our guest is Dr. Alan Francis. He is one of the leading psychiatrists of our time. He's written a new book called The Twilight of American Sanity. A psychiatrist analyzes the age of Trump. Now, it doesn't so much question the mental health of Donald Trump. Instead, Dr. Francis looks at the mental health of our country, considering that we elected Trump. Francis wrote The Definition of Narcissistic Personality Disorder in the DSM. Of course, that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the Bible of Psychiatry. We're pleased to join Dr. Alan Francis by phone. Good morning to you.
I'm equally pleased to join you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I have to ask you first because I'm fascinated. You know, a lot of people throw around that term narcissistic personality disorder and I think a lot of people don't understand it. And so I'm curious if you can give us, since you wrote the definition in the DSM, just an overview of what that is.
Well, it just think Donald Trump. Watch his every move and you'll have the definition. You don't have to be a psychiatrist or an expert in diagnosis to sense the man. It's people who are grandiose, who constantly require admiration, who have to hang out with rich and famous people and prove how rich and famous and wonderful they are, constantly seeking praise and admiration, with very little empathy for other people, and with a constant self-serving and self-absorption. So everything about Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. And he's kind of a reality TV host. The two best ways of understanding Donald Trump, I think, are one, he's think of him as presiding as president, more as a reality TV host. And two, think of a four-year-old spoiled brat.
You got it. That's right. You talk in your book mostly about what you call the profound and unsettling analysis of the national psyche right now and sort of the symptoms of the fact that or electing Donald Trump is just a symptom of a deeper issue surrounding what's going on with this. So we'll get into that in a minute, but I have to ask you first, you do also talk about, you juxtapose Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump in the election, and it's all about how truth wasn't appealing, lies were somehow more appealing. Take us through that.
Well, I guess to do the second first, Hillary Clinton would have been at least an average president, but she was a terrible candidate, and she never connected with the people. She didn't really listen. She didn't care. Trump was the world's worst president, terrible choice, but he was at least to some people, a very appealing candidate. It was almost like a tent circus or a revival meeting. And he was never boring. He connected to the people in the audience. So that he's a con man and a showman selling snake oil, but that worked better than the hard truths that we really need to face, or else we're going to be leaving a terrible world to our children and to our grandchildren. I think Trump, to go to your first part, he is a mirror in our soul, and the reflection isn't pretty, that he is pursuing all of the worst possible policies that will cause disaster for this country and for the world and for our children and grandchildren. And I started writing this book 2 years before he declared candidacy. I was worried then, as a grandfather and as a father, that we were headed in a terrible direction. I had always been politically missing in action for every important event during my lifetime. I was sitting on the beach and not participating. And I felt that at this late stage of my life, I should do whatever I can do to make it, in my own small way, to make it a better place for our future generations. Every problem I defined in the book, I defined about 14 different instances of societal delusion, things, existential threats that we weren't facing. Every single one of them Trump has made worse in the short period of time. And so I think we can't just call him names. Psychological name-calling won't stop Trump. we have to, in the short run, contain it politically. But in the long run, the issue is us. And we have to try to understand what it is about human nature and what it is about the political and the money inequality in the United States that has us choose such a bad president. We have to look deeper into ourselves in order to become a country that will be fit to hand on to our kids.
Well, I must say, Dr. Francis, you have not just dived into this. You've created quite a splash. I'd call it a cannonball. And you're back to your initial definition of narcissistic personality disorder. You said that Donald Trump is the representation, the personification of a narcissistic personality, but you're also saying he does not have a disorder.
Yeah, and I think that it's a kind of distraction from the political urgency of what we have to be doing to control him, to worry about his diagnosis and his motivation. He doesn't qualify for a disorder because in order to be mentally ill, you're not just required to have the symptoms. You also have to experience considerable distress and impairment from them. And Donald Trump certainly causes lots of distress and has lots of impairment, and he's a terrible president. But that doesn't make him mentally ill. We've had lots of narcissistic presidents. There are lots of celebrities who are narcissistic. This doesn't mean that the whole world is mentally ill. And we've had presidents and world leaders who were mentally ill. Abraham Lincoln had severe depressions. Winston Churchill had very severe depressions. Having a mental illness doesn't necessarily disqualify you from being the great leader of your century. And on the other hand, we shouldn't be confusing bad behavior with mental illness because it's terribly stigmatizing to the mentally ill. They don't deserve to be lumped with someone as obnoxious as Donald Trump because most of them are nice people. It's also a way of underestimating the risks of Donald Trump. He's crazy like a fox. Some people are calling him demented. He's certainly very, very skillful at feathering his own nest. When it comes to Donald Trump, he's as bright as anyone. And some people say he has delusional disorder because he's a conspiracy theorist. He's been a conspiracy theorist since his 20s. He learned it at the feet of a master, Roy Cohn, who was the brains behind McCarthy's communist conspiracy theories in the 50s. He's been a consistent conspiracy theorist. He won the election partly because of his conspiracy theories. He got into it because of the birther stuff with Obama. The idea that rapists from Mexico were causing American problems. Lots of people in America believe in conspiracies, and to be delusional, you have to be a minority of one. At this point, Trump is a minority of 35% of the population.
As you've said, as a television personality, the man knows how to get ratings. And the success of his campaign, I think you put out there the statement that, and we know it's valid, that he got billions of dollars of coverage by virtue of his personality from the mainstream media.
And everyone, including me, is glued to the latest seemingly bizarre thing he says every single day. But if you think about the goal of Trump's time in office being mostly attracting attention to Trump, he's a huge success. The fact that the way he does this is detrimental to our country and the world is of very little significance to him or something that's outside his ability to reflect upon. So every single day is a reality show. No American has ever attracted as much attention as Donald Trump. And what we have to do is refocus our attention from his latest outrageous statement or action and focus on the fact that I don't want this guy's finger on the nuclear button. Congress should be passing a new protocol that makes clear that a president cannot by himself institute nuclear warfare. I don't want this guy able to declare war unilaterally, as so many presidents have since World War II. Congress should reassert its Article I constitutional power to exclusively declare war. The Congress has to provide adult supervision.
Are we at fault as a people that we have created or accepted a system that pretty much requires a narcissistic personality to run for office?
Well, I think that's an exaggeration. I think that if Obama had a problem, I think he was too nice a guy, too noble a person to be an effective president. So he was up against tremendous money forces that were doing their best to destroy him. And it may have been that no one could have succeeded under those conditions. But I think that if he were more narcissistic and more tough, he might have done a much better job of salvaging the Democratic Party and of preventing the takeover of radical right Tea Party factions in Congress and stopping Trump's rise. I think that the system, it's partly human nature, it's partly big money. So we're descended from people who lived in small bands wandering the large face of the earth and never sure whether they would survive until the next day. The average life expectancy was about 35 years. Long-term planning was not part of the natural selection that created our brains. It was short-term survival. And so it's very hard for us to plan for the long run. Altruism is there for our close family, but not there for the people not in our tribe. So it's hard for us to be altruistic enough to realize that we're now all in the same boat, that we're all one tribe in this country. In fact, the human species is one tribe, and that if we don't work rowing together, we're going to sink the boat. And it's very hard for us to control emotional, irrational thinking because the older parts of our brain send many more fibers to the rational parts than the rational parts send back. So it's always a struggle. Plato called it, saw it as a charioteer controlling wild horses pulling in different directions. It's always a struggle for us to do the right thing, the rational thing, the generous thing, and the thing that will have good long-term consequences. But we can do it. I mean, evolution produced Albert Einstein, not just Donald Trump. There are better angels, and great leaders in the past, like Abraham Lincoln, were able to appeal to them. And the hope is that we can get back to being a country that's governed by rational people and that we can become a people that requires more from its government. The people are wiser and less polarized than our government.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Alan Francis. He's written a new book called The Twilight of American Sanity. A psychiatrist analyzes the age of Trump. And really, you know, you say the age of Trump, but you could say the age of Rush Limbaugh or, you know, the age of many other of these personalities that somehow play upon this part of us that is perhaps not the rational side, as you say, that we have a preponderance to go towards, the side of us that maybe is somewhat fearful, and it validates our fear somehow when they bring out these brash claims and concepts. Is that, I mean, talk about fear in all of this.
Well, I think that the message that was sent to us by this election of Trump is a very important message, and most of the people sending it are very decent people. Leave out the Nazis and the Aryans and the anti-Semites and the misogynists. Most of Trump voters are people who are suffering from an economy that now is terribly unequal and not fair to them, and the small towns are dying. The 20 richest people in America have more wealth than the lowest half of our population. The 170 million people have less wealth than 20 people in the United States is a terrible testimony to how our system has worked in the last 50 years. Technology always favors the rich against the worker, but never before has it resulted in this big an imbalance. And a lot of the money used, a lot of money earned, has been used in a concerted propaganda campaign that's rigged the tax system so that the redistribution is perverse from sort of reverse Robin Hood. From the poor, we will take in order to give to the rich. And Trump's tax bill will just accentuate these trends. So I don't think Rush Limbaugh didn't come out of nowhere. There's been a 50-year campaign to do all the things necessary to promote the idea that government's the problem, not rapacious billionaires or greedy corporations, that we don't need to have umpires to make sure that we're protected from corporate short-term thinking that just cares about the executives and the shareholders, that it's the immigrants who are the problem, it's the foreign workers who are the problem, it's the trade agreements that are the problem. We have to look first to the inequality inequalities and unfairness in American life. And I think that a lot of Trump voters will no longer be Trump voters the better they get to know him and realize that he was a false prophet selling them a bill of goods.
You've spent a lot of time analyzing this election and the players in it. Do you have a sense in your own head as to what the outcome would have been had Bernie Sanders been running against Donald Trump?
You know, counterfactual as ifs are always difficult. And Bernie Sanders, I think, was bearing the right message. He was piercing the denial of societal delusions on almost every issue. But whether he would have been a messenger who could have won is another question. He would have seemed like an exotic plant to many people in middle America. The last candidate who saw the world straight on and could appeal to the average Joe was Bill Clinton. He had all sorts of personal flaws that we don't have to go into, but as a political leader, he was the last person who could capture the rural areas, could appeal to the common man, and at the same time could bring them to do things that are hard to do but important. He had budget surpluses, not all of his doing, but he had budget surpluses that he could have spent on tax cuts, and instead he was able to sell the idea that we should be saving those surpluses to protect the Social Security system. He was able to get Americans actually to poll in favor of long-term rational thinking that would be favorable to children and grandchildren. So it can be done. I think that the future is hopeful that we can get out of this dark age if we recognize it for what it is and do our best to do the opposite. The future is hopeful if we can have rational leaders and if we can have a public that's so aroused. The best news about Trump is he's so bad at it. Someone with Trump's aspirations who was smarter and more disciplined could have become a dictator. And we're not out of the woods. Fragile as our democracy is, we're not out of the woods. Very few countries have maintained democracies for any length of time. They're very, very vulnerable to demagogic leaders. And we haven't had catastrophes, and yet Trump is president. With catastrophes and with a clever person, our democracy could be at risk. And I think that we're lucky to have someone as grotesque as Trump representing his policies, representing his attitudes towards democracy, because hopefully, and it's already happening, he will mobilize the opposition of the people away from the hatred and fear and lies that are at the basis of his governance. And the people mobilized can be powerful. Abraham Lincoln said, you can fool all the people some of the time, and you can fool some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And we have to hope that's true.
The optimist in me believes that the republic is stronger than this individual. You have flipped the switch on the failure of serious pundits and media during the campaign who, as they say, took Donald Trump literally but not seriously. And you're showing that there is a serious side to this, and there's nothing literal about the man. Is there,
yeah.
In your book, you propose variations on a future here, the worst case and two best case scenarios. And we're a few months away, I'm sure, now from when you wrote that. Where do you think we are?
Well, my worst fears will not be realized precisely because of what I said just now, that Trump's so bad at it. If he had been more controllable and more skillful and less undisciplined and less narcissistic, he had a good chance to subvert the courts, to put public opinion on his side, to dominate the Congress, and to bully the free press. And that would have been absolutely disastrous. I think that there's a good chance that he will be impeached. Mueller's investigations will very likely, almost undoubtedly, turn up all sorts of corruption, both in the Russian connection during the election and also in Trump's business dealings before and after the White House. I think the Republicans will start, they already are starting to realize that he's a bad horse to ride, that he's insulting the people who were responsible for his impeachment and removal from office, which is a stupid thing to do that only he would do, that there's a fair chance he'll be impeached. I think that's a bad thing for the country. I think that Pence and Ryan are much more dangerous purveyors because they're more plausible representatives of the same terrible policies, and that we'd be better off having 4 years of Trump making a mistake or 10 mistakes every single day and us seeing the consequences of those mistakes to discredit not just him, because that's unimportant. He's so easily discreditable. But the policies themselves have to be discredited, and I think Pence and Ryan would make that harder. I think that in the short run, we have to make sure this guy doesn't do something disastrous, and the Congress has to step in and make sure that he's not allowed to start a war or press a nuclear button. I think in the long run, 2018 is a tremendous uphill climb. As terrible as Trump has been, the system is so rigged by gerrymandering that it's going to be very, very difficult to have much of a change in Washington, unless the people are aroused. And I've been at times encouraged, but at times discouraged by the lack of public response. So we had this occasional wonderful women's march or science march. But during the health debate, there wasn't a big march to protect Obamacare, and there should have been, won by only one vote. But there should have been marches all over the country before that. We should be having marches now about the tax bill. That's a tremendous giveaway to the rich that's going to make the inequality much worse. There should be marches about drug prices. The latest cancer drug is $450,000. This is because they control Washington, and they will continue to control Washington unless the people take it back. So I've been a political inactivist my whole life, missing in action for every important issue in the last 74 years. And I think that I got roused to write this book because I think at this point my life was shameful, and it's unconscionable not to get involved. Because, again, our kids and grandkids, their future is at stake, and we all have to do our best in every way possible, demonstrations, canvassing for elections, being informed, informing others, listening to others. I spend a lot of time these days talking to Trump voters and trying to understand what their aspirations are, what their fears are, what their hatreds are, and to have conversations that will lead them to realize that when you get down to the actual performance, the man is not representing their point of view.
Our guest is Dr. Alan Francis. His new book is Twilight of American Sanity. A psychiatrist analyzes the age of Trump. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to try to get the message out. I appreciate it.
And this is The Mountain Life. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. I want to thank our underwriters, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Phil Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Zions Bank, and Fairway Industries.